Some smart people reckon it may be the oldest bit of the Old Testament that we have. It was the first that was written down, wherever the stories came from. And Job is one of those troubling books. If you actually stop and read through its 42 chapters, it takes you on a journey into some of the darkest places. For Job was a man who was really blessed, lived in a place of blessing. And the story goes that Satan sees how blessed he is and says to God, "He only worships you because you bless him." And so Satan starts to strip away. The enemy starts to strip away some of these things: family, health, wealth, well-being. You eventually get to the point with Job where Job's wife says, "Why don't you curse God and die?" And Job says, "No, even though he kills me, still I will praise him." I don't know about you, or were you on Friday morning when the sun became dark? The organized among you perhaps had a welder's mask to look through. I couldn't manage that, so I had three pairs of sunglasses, one on top of the other. And even then, it was only when the cloud passed in front of it. What a truly amazing sight. Was fascinated as the eclipse was happening on Friday that we went to the team from Stargazing Live, Brian Cox, the keyboard player from D-Ream, for those of you who remember that, but also an astrophysicist of tremendous note, and has been involved in all the experimental stuff at CERN with the Large Hadron Collider. You know that thing that people were afraid that they'd start it up and everywhere would disappear into a black hole? But the interesting thing about Brian Cox is an atheist. And he was presenting it with Dara Brain. Some of you will know him from, what's that thing he does? Mock the Week. I knew I had Week in there somewhere. And Dara Brain is described himself as a Catholic atheist. So he's an atheist, but a Catholic-flavored atheist, which is funny all by itself, especially if you're Catholic. But there was a lot of talk on the coverage in the BBC about, well, you know, we used to think there was great portent of danger and people look at eclipses and go, "Ah," and you can understand that. But, and this famous phrase, "We know better now." We know better now. And then the people would go on to talk about these people, many of whom would proclaim either to be agnostic or even atheist, to use some interesting language to describe what they were seeing. They talked about it being awesome. Talked about it being mysterious. Talked about it being wonderful, full of wonder. C.S. Lewis, remember him? Wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which he did in his spare time, so he's a very, very smart guy. Although, don't feel too sorry for him, because someone figured out those Oxford and Cambridge dons did about 20 hours work a week, and the rest of it was all theirs. That's how they wrote so much and drank so much beer in The Eagle and Child and things of that nature. But sounds kind of fun, doesn't it? But he writes in a book that he wrote that you maybe haven't heard of called Out of the Silent Planet. It's a science fiction novel for people who aren't into science. And the main character is a guy called Ransom. And just like in Dickens or whatever, his name means something. And he's in a spaceship making his way to Venus. And they're looking at the sun. And something's described about the character of the sun as if the sun had feelings. To which Ransom said, "I thought it was just a ball of hot gas." To which the alien speaking to him says, "Oh, that's what it's made of. It's not what it is." Isn't that something? The truth is, before human beings learn to plumb the depths of space, before we fixed the Hubble telescope, which got sent up with a problem, how human's that? Before we saw it, before we even knew it was there, before Jacques Cousteau found sea cucumbers at the bottom of the ocean trenches, before the explorers made their way to the South Pole, before they discovered bacteria that can live in Antarctica, or they found the first colony of emperor penguins. Before all of that, it still was there. It was still awesome. It was still wonderful. It was still mysterious. Why? Because it was made. It was made and it was meant. What do we do in the face of the world's suffering? Do we just throw up our hands and say there's no God? How could a loving God make a universe where there's so much suffering? And Job's first answer to that is that we're made and we're meant. And even in the midst of all of his blessings being stripped away, everything but his own life, Job, depressed, uncomforted by his friend's best efforts, still will not give up on the notion that he is made and he is meant to be here. It's fascinating to me. We spoke about Stephen Fry, another famous atheist, who said, how could there be a God when there's so much suffering, when there's worms that bury into children's eyes, when there's, what about cancer? And that's an amazing line of argument, because you think, now he knows that if there's a God, God must be good. So the God he rejects is the God who deals out suffering like a croupier deals out cards in Las Vegas. So that gives us those two choices. Either the eclipse that we saw is just the random mechanics of an unmeant universe as it gives birth to and dies, as it has no meaning, no direction, no certainty, no nothing. Or actually what we see when we look out into the depths of space is the extraordinary creativity of a God who makes things in such beautiful detail that we are not yet smart enough to see it all or understand more than a fraction of it. It was fun, because as the eclipse was happening, some of you learned something. Every day is a school day. And you learned that the surface of the sun is much, much colder than the atmosphere around the sun. The corona, instead of being thousands and thousands of degrees, is anywhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000 degrees centigrade. So its atmosphere is much hotter than its surface. How? And of course the physicists say, don't know. It's one of the great mysteries of the universe. To which any card-carrying theologian or any granny who knows her hymn book would be able to put a hand on the physicist's shoulder and say, there's even more wonderful questions than that, son. Were we meant? Are we made? Does our life have a purpose? But it doesn't get away from the question of suffering. What does our suffering mean? And we're going to come back to that. Because sometimes life is good. Sometimes life is just incredibly good, looking at baby Cameron, looking at those big old eyes looking up at you. Or to see that, you know, I'm going to ask his family about this later, but I think Nathan's changed color since he first came here. He was a sort of gray taupe when he first turned up here, and now he's kind of pink. Make of that what you will. Sometimes life is good. But sometimes our path is hard. And some of you are going through tough times just now. Really tough, really difficult times. And the book of Job looks at this, and it looks at one of the key questions, because as Satan's trying to, and Satan just means the accuser, okay? It's just the one who accuses us. None of us like that, eh? The one who accuses us. And he's just stripping away all of Job's life. We know it's Satan because we've got this big picture view of the book of Job, but the people in Job's story just think it's God. And they think it's God that's causing the suffering, it's God that caused the children to die, and it's God that caused the flocks to be stolen and slaughtered, and it's God who caused Job to break out in sores, and it's God who caused all the suffering. Press pause. We're going to come back to that. I want to have a look at one of the life is good things for me. When Johnny came here, back in 2010, Johnny and Kate showed up. I was just delighted, and what a thrill they've been. I've got a card here which you can sign later, okay? But I'll just read you what I've written, because I think it's quite good. But I've left a lot of space for you, and for the girls, I brought colors, okay? Because that matters. Dear Johnny and Kate, words cannot adequately express our thanks for everything you have brought to us as a church. Go with our blessing and our prayers that you stoke a fire of revival in the north. Know that the same Spirit who raised Jesus from the dead is with you. In him you have everything you need. May our Father guide, lead, and protect you as you live out his calling on your lives together. Always yours in Jesus' love, Mark. And a few scripture verses. Do stick some scriptures on there. You can add to that later. Johnny and Kate have been consistently drawing us back to God's purposes for us, helping us to stretch on. I said to Johnny, I give you carte blanche, you can do whatever you want. He said, what shall I preach on? I said, you decide. You have a chat with your Father in heaven, I'll back you up. And he comes back and says, doors and cakes. So I said, great, this should be fun. Doors and cakes. And he preached through a whole series on doors and cakes. Some of you are wondering, what's all that about? The door's about being an open door to the community, holding an open door to heaven, so that when people come here, they experience the reality of God. And cakes is all to do with luxurious, gorgeous hospitality. Johnny prophesied in the September of that year about the community recycling project. He came to me and he said, Mark, I saw one of those Mark recycling vans up near the primary school, and I think that's for here. I said, I don't know. Just at the time when Agnes was saying, Mark, I've got a bit of a plan. I think maybe we could start gathering in people's unused or don't need any more goods, and we could sell them for the benefit. We could send money out to good causes locally. Last year, the Community Recycling Project distributed £18,000. I did the sums. That's £349 a week. Johnny has always been calling us, and Kate as well, into worship. They've been leading us on in worship and reminding us of the link that there is between worship and service, of looking after people, and of mission, of bringing the reality of Jesus' love to people. Johnny actually suggested that we're Heaven's Council employees. And prescient for what we've been doing is always encouraging us into God's presence with the work they've done with Lamb, with Love After Marriage, the course they led here, which is just phenomenal, and have continued to lead around the country, helping people in their marriage, seeing God break through in miraculous ways, and helping people with souls just to see some breakthrough in their lives, and how the presence of God in our life makes all the difference, and that we ourselves are meant to carry God's presence into situations. Who can forget that first harvest where Johnny built a tabernacle here? And it took him a whole week to do one service, and we all gathered, and we all had the stations around about, and we're doing our, and we looked at the whole festival Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, the ingathering of the first fruits, and we're it was just a fantastic Sunday. And then Johnny took on the task of doing a mission audit, having a look at the possibility for mission in the local area. And this 48 square miles, these 6,500 people that God's called us to, although frankly, we seem to have a bigger scope than that these days. And the themes that drew out of that mission audit for worship services, for healing, for prophecy and prayer, for supporting the community in all sorts of ways, providing opportunities for families, for vulnerable adults, and improving opportunities for social economic disadvantage, improving opportunities for education and learning. In every one of these areas, the church is stronger than it was when Johnny sat down in 2011 to do all that. Drawing us nearer to that vision that God's given us, to encourage everyone to live in the reality of Jesus' love. And then flowing out of the mission audit came the mission strategy, which is kind of like a route map, a Haynes manual of how we do church here, prophetically and practically. So we can look at it and see what we do, and we can look at it and see where we're going. And we're just moving into a season where we're going to start the process of reviewing this. And the impact that Johnny and Kate have had on our church for being here, just been amazing. And then always calling us back to that truth that we have a Father in heaven who is longing to draw us into his family. Hasn't it been fab having Johnny and Kate? We're going to get a chance to pray with them in just a wee while, but it just has been. Thank you so much. We are so much in your debt. But in many ways, these last years have been tough for Johnny and Kate. I have never, ever known someone have such trouble finding a church. And indeed, there's been occasions where it's looked like something was secured, and yet at the last minute, things went belly up. They've been through a hard path. It reminds me of the story of Job, sometimes unspeakably hard and inexplicably hard. And yet through that time, having Johnny and Kate here has been a real blessing. That envisioning of the Hope Springs Project, of all the different things that they've brought to us, have been such a blessing and a benefit. How do we square all that up? And then thinking about Cameron today as we've dedicated him to life with Jesus, and thinking about Nathan as we've baptized him to be part of the body here and around the world, the church. Life is going to be unspeakably tough sometimes. And there's going to be moments of great blessing. And sometimes those are the one and same time. That there's the extremes of incredible things happening and also very painful things taking place. What do we do with that? There are three people who gather around Job. Two of them aren't much use. They expound human wisdom about suffering, and maybe they're right, maybe they're not, but God really doesn't give them much respect when, because God enters into the conversation later on, and the first two friends get right ticking off. And then there's a third guy who's a bit younger, his name's Elihu, and Elihu's kind of got a bit more of it, but even so, God kind of tells him off too. But there's a phrase that Elihu uses as he's talking to Job, and he speaks on God's behalf the most incredible things. He says, "I will woo you from the jaws of distress." Right there. Right, imagine the cruelty and suffering of this world is biting in. And God is speaking to us at this point saying, "I'll woo you. I'll draw you out, cause you to return to me. Even in that moment of greatest suffering, I will reach in and draw you out." And that word woo, it's not just a call, it's not an instruction. It's that thing where God's kindness and his goodness and his love, the fact that we're made and meant and have a purpose, that's calling out to us that there's a life worth living, as is said to the children of Israel in the desert through the voice of Moses. "I've laid before you the choice, life and death. Choose life." That wasn't Frankie Goes to Hollywood, by the way. Nobody knew when they had those white t-shirts on in the 80s that they were carrying a biblical quote around on their chest. So what of our suffering? The scriptures speak of a world that's broken. It's broken by our wrong choices. It's broken by our rebellion or just our ignoring of God. We were made to live in communion with him. We were meant to mesh together with the reality of God's love. And when we break from that, bad things happen. In that vacuum in our own lives and in the lives of our communities and the lives of the world, bad things happen. But God knew that we might choose poorly. And he had a true and better Job. He had a true and better Job. Who, as we were hearing in that video, prays for his foolish friends. And then he's the one who woos us from the jaws of distress. I'm going to tell you something very important just now, so turn your hearing aid up. Wake up, nudge your neighbor. Make sure. Are you paying attention? If you want to see what God is like, look at Jesus. God is mysterious and majestic and wonderful and awesome and just so much more so than the eclipse, which is the moon blocking out the sun. But that mysterious, awesome, amazing, wonderful God doesn't hide behind Jesus. He's revealed in Jesus. And the mysterious, wonderful, awesome, incredible God is no different from Jesus. We can see God's character in Jesus. If we get to know Jesus, we get to know God. That is the truth of the Christian story. And that is an extraordinary thought, that the God of the universe can be revealed in this person that we can read about in the Gospels. And the gospel story is that even when it looks like God has permitted this suffering, somehow there's just, I don't know, there's 1,500 prostate cancers to hand out today, so they're going to those people, and there's so much suffering to deal out, so it's dealt out to people. Oftentimes we talk as if that's the way that God works, but the fact is the reverse, that actually when God came among us as a human being, the true and better Job, instead of meting out suffering on those who've done wrong, he draws all the suffering upon himself. He draws it upon himself, and so stripped of the blessing, stripped of all the good things of heaven, he comes to the earth, he lives among us, he tolerates us. He brings the compassion and love of Jesus, healing the sick, raising the dead, freeing the oppressed, sorting out people's internal issues and external issues. And then he shoulders up all of the suffering from all of humanity and all of the world, in all of the universe, takes it on his shoulders, and he bears it to the cross. Every frightening diagnosis, every rejection, every harsh word, everything that makes us guilty, everything that brings us shame, everything that causes us pain, shouldered up by Jesus. Is there a God? You bet. How do we know? Because of Jesus. What about the suffering? There's not a single piece of suffering in this world he has not shouldered up. And he did that on our behalf. As John writes, for God sent his Son into the world, his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through it. Amen?